This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing podcast.
Not ideal.
The hotter the temperature, the hotter the takes.
I'm just saying, we've recorded in multiple bars.
I know, and people have complained about them, so... Managing editor of Lookout Landing, and I am joined today again by my co-host, John Troopin. John!
G'day. How you doing?
Oh, I see we're getting to the London series a little early.
Really, an accidental instinctive move.
But also a little bit like Australia. Like, I'm concerned now that you are not exactly sure what a British accent should sound like.
Well, that was weird too, because it was British slash Australian slang in your normal voice.
Yes.
I kind of like the idea of that.
I have been mistaken for being from Texas by many people because
you are big.
Well, I'm bearded, I'm not sure, I'm getting hurtful. But like my instinctive greeting when someone like says like hello is to say like howdy or something like that, there's no other affect beyond that. So I don't know. I think the initial affect, regular voice, people read into it too much.
John says this as he takes off his cowboy hat.
I did wear a cowboy hat outside like this week.
I mean, we've all got to do what we got to do to stay shaded. Speaking of shade, we have Matthew Robertson here with us today.
What an intro. I love that. I love all of these little pockets that I can fill here on the internet.
Yeah, you are sort of the master of the very subtle put down, which we were talking about a little earlier with the absolutely banging British expression. Would you look at the state of that?
Yeah, the absolute state of it.
Yeah. Which is, I think, the most devastating thing anyone could ever possibly say. Yeah. I read some tweet where a woman said that, like, as she was walking past on the bus, someone had whispered to another friend, like, she was kind of disheveled, and, you know, would you look at the absolute state of that? And I would immediately, like, just poof into the ether. I cannot imagine a worse.
There's something about, like, a well-worded, like, almost posh-sounding insult like that really, really takes it to another level. Like, you can say all the obscenities you want, but if you have, like, a nice affectation on it, it hurts a lot more.
Yeah, like being told you're trash by somebody who's also trash,
right.
And I can say this because of my vast experience on the internet,
sure.
Doesn't hurt so much as being told you're trash by somebody with a posh accent.
Exactly, yeah.
So speaking of that, we will get to some talk about the London series.
Yeah.
We're going to catch up with like where the Mariners are right now, because it's been a while since we have convened. We know you have questions about the trade deadline, and other such and the like. So what do you think? Should we kick it off kind of like we're at the end of June? Should we do like kind of a June in review?
I saw that we're past the halfway point in terms of games played, so we kind of have an idea of what these players are. Unless someone goes on a complete tear or falls off a cliff, the numbers are probably somewhat similar to how they're going to end up, which is exciting in some cases and a little depressing in other cases.
Yeah, it's for the good and for the bad. Like, Tim Beckham, not going to be a trade chip, probably, unfortunately, like, after his kind of hot start to the season.
I think we're
going to
see Tim Beckham playing, like, right field in September, and no one's going to, like, think twice about it. It's like, I guess Tim Beckham can do that, I guess. Like, let's let him try it.
Yeah, I mean, they're already moving him all over the infield. They've put him at third. They've put him at second base. They've put him at... I was at a game in person
against the Baltimore Orioles where he played first base. And I was like, this is why a lot of people don't like baseball.
Yeah.
Like, this makes sense to me now. Like, none of this is enjoyable to watch for anyone.
No. And, I mean, the Mariners have played some... they have not played abjectly terrible baseball, is one thing I will say. Like, unlike
that was
May.
That was May.
A .250 winning percentage. So... unlike May, they have not played objectively bad baseball.
Yeah, 429.
Yeah, they've just played bad-ish
baseball. Poor baseball.
We can live with a 429, although it would be
like
better
D
if they were worse.
Baseball. Yeah, so that's something that I want to get to as well, into looking at, you know, draft positioning and things like that, because Larry Stone had an article in the Times the other day, I don't know if you saw it, about how you should root for wins and not root for draft picks, and I take a slightly different tack on that. Obviously, I think anyone who's been listening to the podcast for a while knows that, but I do want to get into that. But back to the, like, slightly bad but not completely unwatchable baseball.
Yeah.
It's too bad, because I think that May was such a sharp downturn from how fun they had been in March and April. And then May was just, I was just an absolute crash, car crash, plane crash, universe crash. I think it just, a lot of people just turned their TVs off and yeah. did not come back and seen, like, the kind of fun developments that we're seeing.
Right. It was like, have you ever had the situation where you can't quite figure out why someone likes you as much as they do? And then you start to, like, kind of ignore them.
I have never had a problem with someone liking me too much, right. for sure.
This is also just a back,
not relatable.
This is a backhanded flex for me, I guess. But, like, I don't know. It happened, like, in school, I feel like it would happen, like, elementary school, middle school. Like, people try to glom onto you, and you're like, no, I don't. And especially when it's like, I haven't given you any reason to mm-hmm. like me, and now all of a sudden you want to be best friends. I feel like the Mariners were getting that vibe from their fans, and were like, oh, you want to buy into this season? That's going to suck. We're going to show you why you absolutely shouldn't do that.
Demonstrably clear.
Yeah. It's like the baseball version of, like, running around the playground and telling everyone how much that other person sucks. Like, oh, they tried to be my friend, but I'm going to start spreading lies about them. That's the Mariners, but they're doing it to themselves.
I am very glad I didn't know you in grade school, because oh, you yeah. sound like a monster, frankly.
Well, when you're this
they
well-liked,
they just
Kate.
Wanted to give you your their friendship, Matthew.
Well, there's a lot of layers there. Quick story. There was this kid who we were playing kickball one day, and he tried to tell everyone that he was in the kickball Olympics, which are not a, it's not a thing.
Like, oh, he was definitely lying. He was lying, but...
He was lying.
Oh.
It was the lie to try to make himself seem cooler, and we all saw right through it.
In fairness, a victimless lie.
A victimless lie.
This one was.
But I got really mad as someone who, you know, cares about the sanctity
of
sports.
Though. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm all about truth and preserving the Olympics, which are, you know, a yeah. bastion of, you know, athletic achievement. Meanwhile,
and if
this
anyone
kid,
was going to the kickball Olympics, let's be clear, it would have been you.
I know, I was a little upset. I was like, where was my call?
Why did
I've seen your kickball. It's not good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway. It's that sort of stupid.
Sorry, so you destroyed his, like,
we
life?
Got in a physical fight, is what happened.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. I was so mad that he was continuing this lie that I had to throw the hands at
did
Kristen
he, did he end up... admitting, copping to his...
I don't remember. That's the funny part of these little skirmishes yeah. as a youth. You don't remember usually either what it was about yeah. or how it ended. But yeah. I remember hitting him, for sure.
For sure.
For sure.
I would maybe liken it to, like, a romantic comedy where the protagonist finds themselves unlikable and is, like, always trying to push away love.
They got to focus on their career, which is always, if it's the woman, it's always they work at a magazine or a media company.
Okay.
Every rom-com.
That is true.
They're always, like, a copy editor who's, like, literally drowning in, like, manuscripts at their desk, and then the boss comes in and they're, like, spilling coffee on their computer.
Yes, we've all seen this movie. So the Mariners are put upon young executive who's just trying yes. to make their way up in the world. Unfortunately, that does mean we're still in, like, maybe the act two of that mm-hmm. movie, where, like, the protagonist is still fairly unlikable or unreachable. And that means that people are missing out on some of the really fun aspects of this season.
Right.
Let's talk about that. Like, I have three big names in my head as far as, like, what the most fun is in tuning in to the games every
Mike
night.
Mike Wright Jr.
Yes.
He's in Tacoma.
No, he is not.
What is his name? Matt Caricetti?
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, actually, Matt Caricetti might be fun.
Matt Caricetti randomly throws 97.
Yeah.
That was legitimately, like, I know people joke about this. That was legitimately the first I've never heard of this guy of the season for me. You guys yeah. might have had
no.
him on your radar.
No. He
yeah.
didn't even have, like, any time in Tacoma. He was
right.
kind
yeah.
of like, they were like, whoosh,
yeah.
like, produced
yeah.
him out of their sleeve yeah. or something.
I remember I had a, like, pop up for like you've looked at this link before for his Fangraphs page, which means that at some point I put him into the links. But absolutely, I did not remember it.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Who are the actual three names?
Who are the actual three names? Who do you think they are?
Vogie,
obviously.
J.P. Crawford.
Death.
And Austin Adams.
Ding, ding, ding.
We did not talk about this beforehand. This is true synergy here.
No,
people.
No.
It's not holding up carefully curated note cards.
Austin Adams isn't like behind Kate pointing at himself, chomping
gum. Chomping gum.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Austin Adams, because I feel like he's been kind of, like relievers do, you know, he's just kind of popped on the scene. And,
sure.
Uh-huh. And he's had a couple of really high leverage spots that have maybe made him a little, stand out a little bit more. But he is delightful. I think he is delightful. He's a super intense competitor. He honors his mother, who passed away, every time he gets on the mound by like he puts her name in the dirt on the mound, and then you know, just comes out and throws hellfire. He said there's a great article written by Max Madden, who I knew in his time working PR for the Rainiers and now has moved all the way up to the big club. Mm-hmm. He wrote a great piece about Austin Adams being surprised that the Mariners picked him up, because he was like, I walk people. The Mariners don't like people who walk people. He has not walked so many people as a Mariner. And it turns out he's like super into the analytics. He says he taught himself to throw, you know, with one of, I don't know about this, you probably know about this, there was a Roger Clemens baseball that taught you grips.
Oh, I have one of those.
Yeah.
It's got like a bunch of drawing. Right. Yeah, it's a very neat thing.
Yeah, so yeah, he taught himself to throw a curveball and a changeup slider, maybe some two different breaking pitches with that. And he just kind of like went out to his backyard one day and mastered it. And his dad came home from work and he was like, Dad, look, I can throw these things now. So he's always been really interested in his pitchcraft. Oh, John is showing me.
I owned one of these. It was very neat.
Okay, so it's got fastball, sort of a four-seam, two-seam thing. And then curveball and slider and the different grips. So yeah, he taught himself to throw a curve and a slider off of that, and
seems to be working.
I mean, the slide, not so much the curve, but the slider is disgusting. That's a pitch that needs a nickname.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's Tony Zick was, for those of you who recall, had Satan's Frisbee.
Yes,
and it is a very similar pitch. If you have an idea,
I suggested the Devil's Toboggan.
I like that a lot. Although toboggans, sort of I would say, famously difficult to turn. As someone who rode some toboggans down icy hills, and the only strategy for not hitting the tree at the bottom was to leave the toboggan.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Sounds tight.
I was looking for like a water slide thing too, like a crazy like Schlitterbahn. But then I realized no one knows what the Schlitterbahn is.
Yeah.
Because I thought Schlitterbad was pretty cool, but no one knows. Schlitterbahn is a very famous water park in Texas. Maybe I'm more Texan than you are.
Wow. I didn't even know they had water in Texas.
Potentially.
It's
been
like
once.
One of those so serious and scary that people die on it. Oh.
I know of the Schlitterbahn, but I don't.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, so Austin Adams, the big question is, do they keep him or do they trade him?
Right.
Because he is he's a reliever of a certain age.
Yeah,
he's probably in peak value right now.
That's what I was going to say. I don't see him getting any better than this. And like, he has really no value for this team. Like, there'll be one of these teams that are like, especially in the NL, where every team is basically still in it besides like the Marlins and the Giants, like one of them will give him a shot. Like every team needs an extra arm who's proven that he can pitch in the big leagues. Like he dominated Christian Yelich, which is quite the
twice.
Sentence.
Twice back to back, and then you know, quite a strong outing against the Astros as well.
He's got at least one strikeout in his last 10 outings, and one of them was a 4 strikeout outing in 2 innings against the Orioles.
I do remember that. Yeah. I mean, he's getting progressively better, I think, as he's embracing more of these analytics, as they're able to teach him more. Oh my God, Jared Kelnick just made an amazing sliding catch. Sorry, must make video.
All right, I'll
yeah, but anyway, Austin Adams, he's not going to be a Mariner, unfortunately. Like, there's no reason really to hang on to him, which is a shame because the Mariners, I think, are to be credited with kind of reinventing his career. The Nationals did not know what to do with him. He had great AAA numbers, and they just didn't really maximize what he was really good at there.
Yeah. The key to team building is just see who the Nationals are getting rid of from their bullpen and then immediately pick them up.
You get rid of Nationals, or like you get all the Nationals bullpen players, you get pretty much like all the Mets position players, and like you're going to be in a good way. Like it is.
Yeah, that's the strategy for sure. Yeah.
I think there's a bunch of teams that, you know, I mean, he's it's not like he has this lengthy track record of success, but he's clearly looked so solid, and it's been bizarre that he wasn't really getting a shot in Washington, like Gal said. There are a lot of teams out there that have rough bullpens that are clear
like
contenders.
The Nationals.
Like the Nationals.
Like the Nationals.
Yeah, the Nationals are in that.
But maybe it would be if they had a decent bullpen.
It's true.
I mean, yeah, you can go down the list. Like the Red Sox are going to need some bullpen help if they want to do anything.
The Braves probably could use some, even though Anthony Swarzak's been helpful there. But like the Cubs, like, I mean, yeah, there are a bunch of teams.
The Dodgers, every postseason, feel like they're one reliever short. Like, they're always trying to find that guy to get to Jansen.
Yeah, especially since Joe Kelly has not been good.
No, quite bad, I've heard.
Yeah, so they're definitely in a position to... He's probably the only traditional sell piece they have. You know, they might sell D. Gordon. They might sell Mike Leake.
But he's the only one who's, like, actually doing it on merit rather than like this season rather than just like, oh, he's a guy that you can have.
Yeah.
Like, teams are going to want Austin Adams, whereas D. Gordon is like, we know what he can do, but he hasn't shown it in like almost 3 years.
I mean, we've seen some suggestions that maybe someone like Austin Adams would be packaged alongside a Kyle Seager or a D. Gordon to kind of offset their salary demands.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which I think is possible. And like, again, the more salary you can clear, I don't. So, a couple of things here. First of all, I think there are a lot of people who are shitting on the Mariners' development because of Ketel Marte's output. And they're seeing Chris Taylor all over again. Sometimes players get better. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean that the Mariners have a broken development system. It doesn't necessarily mean that these other teams have amazing ones. Sometimes it's just little shifts that they make. Although, the Dodgers have pretty amazing development and have sunk a lot of money into that. So have the Mariners. And I think like you can see with he's hurt now, but Connor Sadzek, they took him from the Rangers. They made him useful. They changed up how he pitched. Mm-hmm. They had him pitch slider first. They've done sort of the same thing with Adams. They're working with, I think, a slightly better repertoire with him. The slider is a little bit better. It's a little sharper. But that's a huge developmental win for them. They've identified someone who they thought would flourish in their system. They brought him in. They made these changes. Now they have a useful piece out of
them. Yeah. I think the other point with Marte is like, you know, he's 22 when they traded him.
Yeah.
I mean, guys are 22, get better. You know,
coming into his man strength.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone necessarily would have expected he would become this guy. Certainly, no one expected Chris Taylor would become that guy.
Just real quick, it's important to remember too that when they traded Ketel to get Jean Segura, they were trying to compete at that exact moment. I mean, they didn't want to wait for Ketel to get better. Right. They said we could make the playoffs.
Jean Segura and was an immediate upgrade.
Exactly,
and Jean Segura was really good.
And now they've
turned Jean Segura into J.P. Crawford, who, like, maybe...
Indeed.
Maybe deserves a little bit of... maybe we should shower him with a little bit of praise if we're moving on from Austin Adams.
J.P.,
I had a second
if you're
point
listening,
to make,
this
but
is,
I totally forgot it.
This
so.
Is the part where we eliminate any doubt about you that we all probably had several months ago, maybe even weeks ago.
Yeah. All right. So let's just, like, completely being honest... when Crawford came in, I was like, oh no, this is like, and I had the same doubts about Sheffield, which unfortunately have kind of borne out to be true.
Right.
Like, the Yankees don't give up anything good. John and I both wanted, well, it was mostly John, and then he made me want him to, Davey Florido in Davey that Garcia. Trade. Davey Garcia, sorry. Davey Florido is ours.
We do have, unfortunately. Yes. Well, not unfortunately.
Well, not unfortunately, but just
not as exciting as Davey Garcia.
But we were excited about Davey Garcia, who's still at a pretty low level, and like this, and now he's like a superstar. Yeah, yeah, he's just broken out. He probably wasn't on the table. I saw J.P. Crawford in kind of a similar light. Like, here's a guy who's been, his star has like maybe set somewhat.
Yeah, it's weird when you have a prospect who's gotten worse. That's usually not a good place to be.
I mean, it happens. It happens to a lot of them. And so again, Seattle is rolling the dice. It's the same thing they did with the Sheffield trade. They bet that they were going to be better at pitching development than the Yankees, which is a bold take. Sir.
Yeah. Although the Mariners, I will say, we were just kind of shitting on their player development a little bit. They're good with pitchers, I think. At least this regime has shown Edwin Diaz, the relievers you mentioned, yeah. Sadzek, and the new guy, Austin Adams, like Marco has made improvements. So if you got to give them any credit in player development, I would say it's in pitching. But
yeah, I mean, turning Paxton into his best self. Getting something out of Wade LeBlanc. Like, it is something they've done
for Rowanis is a useful piece.
Yeah. But JP was a surprise. You could squint and see, like, well, he'd been a fine player in the majors so far, mm-hmm. and, like, he's gotten inconsistent work, and he'd had a couple of sort
injuries,
of little injuries, or not even little injuries, but injuries that sort of interrupted his flow.
Sure.
It was still really difficult to see him as a guy who could come in and produce at the level Gene Segura would, considering Gene Segura had been really good, was still pretty young, and was under contract for 3 more years, I believe.
Yeah, he's on a good deal.
And not a bad contract, exactly. So it was, it was one of those trades where it's like, this... even if it's cheaper and theoretically that money goes to someone else who can help make the team better, it's hard to love it. And doubly so when Crawford's had, this huge amount of hype for him for a while, and then that kind of fizzled a little bit. And it has been awesome to see him and to watch him this year. I mean, for all of that concern, and I think there was a lot of prospect hype for him because he was with the Phillies. So in a major market nearby, a lot of people, top 10 pick, clear, like top 10 prospect in baseball for multiple years. Like, this was a guy that was not a household name in baseball, but like if you were heavy into baseball and at all into prospects, knew J.P. Crawford since like 2013.
That's my bar. I'm famously not a huge prospect guy, but if I've heard their name, that's usually
that's a
sign.
A big deal prospect.
And I knew who J.P. Crawford was.
Yeah. I mean, Carl Crawford's cousin. So like related to a legit star player.
Yeah,
like,
I loved Carl Crawford.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot, and it was especially, I think, worrying when they were immediately going to put him in Tacoma. That this guy who, had every reason to think, oh, I'll just be the starting shortstop for this dog shit team that is intentionally not trying to win. Oh, you're just going to put me in AAA again?
Oh, you're
again?
Just going to play Tim Beckham every day?
Yeah.
Let me sit back and watch how that goes for you.
Yeah. And he's done, it's such a cliche, but like, he's done everything right. Like,
yeah.
He went and worked on his defense. He adjusted his swing. He's adjusted his stance.
Yeah.
Like, all of these little factors have improved, and it's all coming together in this amazing way that makes it exciting to watch the Mariners, at least once every nine hitter.
It felt less gross, too, that he was in AAA for actual reasons rather than just purely service time ones. Yeah. Like, he did need to work on his defense. Yes. He did have some things with his swing that weren't great, especially if you're going to play him at shortstop every day for the next 5 years or whatever. Yeah. But he's doing a lot of things that I really like. Two in particular, I mean, it's still relatively early. He's got, at the time we're recording this, 142 plate appearances, but he's got a double-digit walk rate, and he's hitting the ball to all fields, which is a great sign for someone who's still 24 years old and like in a new and a system. Lefty. And a lefty, because they're shifting him, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. Like they already decided we're going to give you the five hole.
He was really pull heavy last year and the last few years in the minors after like initially when he was coming up, he was a spray guy. And one of the things he talked about was that he developed a like pull tendency when he would try and essentially hit the shit out of the ball and yank it, and he'd pull his head a little bit and he would roll over a lot, and he'd still hit the ball hard because he was really talented, but now he said he's essentially gotten when he does that every once in a while he catches himself because he knows like he can do so much more if he's hitting it everywhere.
One of the biggest differences I've seen with him in batting is the way he watches the ball in now. Like you were saying about him moving his head. Like you look at film from him now versus, you know, a year ago, whatever. You can really see that difference. And it's the same thing that Mitch Haniger is really good at. Mitch Haniger is excellent at keeping his head still. And I feel like that might be a Tim Laker thing because Laker worked with Haniger. You know, it's something that I think you're starting to see more of the players do.
And that's, especially with Haniger, is a neat point because, and this is fairly nitty gritty, especially for an audio medium, but when you watch Haniger take his swing, he has a lot of body movement, but his head doesn't move. Like, he's got a big old leg kick that helps him get power, but his head is locked at the same level. It doesn't, like, move a ton. Yeah,
he's got a lot of hip torque, too. He just kind of rings himself out like a dish rag.
Yeah, like to the point where he'll roll over his ankles a lot to a point where it's like, I get worried that he's going to slowly just destroy himself
like
that.
The hip torque thing, like, now he's got, you know, in that region of his body, he has a severe injury.
That's true.
Keep saying, like, Mitch, you're going too hard. Like, all the reports have been, like, Mitch needs to ease into this, and you're kind of like, well, why is that? And then you think about the motion of a baseball swing and the effect that would probably have on your lower half. And it makes sense. Like, Mitch, there's no reason to rush back.
There's nothing that for you to save in this season.
Literally, like, yeah, exactly. You can just wear a suit for every game and sit in the dugout like an NBA player, and I'd be fine with that. Just serve looks all season.
Jawan Haniger.
Serve looks all season. I'd love to see Mitch Haniger serve some looks. I think that would be really fun.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if... That actually, I would love to see that. If baseball players who were injured, instead of wearing the like team pullover, got to wear their street clothes like you do in the NBA.
Yeah.
You'd see a lot of terrible outfits because baseball players are not well-dressed. I think it'd be a lot of really baggy sweatpants.
And camo.
Camo, for sure. Yeah. A hat of like a company that makes baseball apparel.
Yeah. Or like one of those like... semi-mesh hats with the like rectangular logo,
the three-quarter t-shirt, all of that.
I remember what the other point I wanted to make was, which was in the idea of trading off D. Gordon as well, or Kyle Seager, like packaging them with someone who is younger, packaging someone who is cost-controlled and affordable. You have to believe that they are clearing salary in order to do things, whether that's to extend a young player like J.P. Crawford, whether that is to go out and buy some pitching because, oh my God, the pitching. I feel like that is the biggest leap of faith that's required right now for Mariners fans. It's not can they develop these guys, because I think like, if you're really paying attention to the system, up and down the levels, you're seeing development that's happening. I believe in their ability to develop players. I do question how much, just because we don't know this, I question how much financial flexibility is a thing and how much of it is trying to save money on a team that, you know, hasn't been very good and hasn't made great returns.
Right. I mean, it is...
I'm heavily air quoting that in case you can't tell. I'm not concerned about money going into John Stanton's pocket. Let's be clear about that.
I think that that's the big question mark for me. And to some degree, I think that, like, no, the Mariners have not spent as much as I think that I would like them to, because, you know, there was a big story from, I think it was a two-part story with John Stanton interviews in the Seattle Times, and one of the things he talked about was how much he hates losing and all this stuff, and it was a little bit, you know, I mean, I'm sure he does, And I believe.
Can you imagine if he was like, one thing I love, lose it.
No, I got this rich, a lot of L's. It was a little bit tough to take some of it, just because, especially like the 2016 and the 2018, not as much as 2018, but especially the 2016 teams, like those teams were, I mean, even the 2017 team, which I think ended up closer to a playoff spot than the 2018 team, despite the record difference, like those teams were a pitcher or two away.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have been like Clayton Kershaw. It would have been like, you know, an average pitcher or two. It
would have been nice to have someone from in the system at that time who was ready to play and contribute to a winning team.
And it's, you know, we're not going to be able to relitigate all of that, but I believe in their willingness to spend to the amount of payroll that they were spending the last 3 years.
I agree.
I think that is a payroll level that you can win the division and you can win a championship at if you are good at developing and good at scouting and good at all the other parts of baseball.
And if they're the right guys that you're spending the money on, right? Like, and I mean, it will be, I appreciate trying to trade your way into contending with Drew Smyly, but let's be honest, Drew Smyly was not going to be delivering you a championship. He was not.
No, I don't think he was delivering you a championship. I think a healthy Drew Smyly that year and you're like right against a playoff berth.
Exactly.
Just because you don't have to do as much shuffling and all that stuff. But that's like that ultimately being what happened was a catastrophic scenario, but it also like the entire rotation was very injury prone and like
that is
even if they didn't get like even if they had some worst case scenarios, a slightly better case scenario still would have been not good enough and it could have been avoided.
Yeah.
All of which is to say I believe that they can do a better job spending smartly. I worry that the options for them to spend are not going to be as good because of the way that baseball is currently going and because of how many extensions there have been of young, talented players who otherwise would reach free agency.
Yeah.
And because, essentially, if we're going to spend that money on extensions, we have to have most of that money go to... Essentially, that means the talent has to be within the system right now. And I don't know, even though there is plenty of good talent and there's more talent that's being uncovered and developed, I don't know if there's enough talent in the system right now to build that 2022 competitor.
Sure.
So that's what worries me with financial flexibility is when the time comes, even if they're willing to spend a good amount of it, is there going to be a smart way to spend it? You know, or is it going to be something like this past offseason where it's like, yeah, I mean, it's a bunch of, you know, mid-30s starting pitchers who all have pretty big red flags.
Right.
Like,
yeah. And that's a problem the more guys you see getting locked up at early ages. But, you know, I think it's smart to have because why not clear some salary now? Mm-hmm. There's nothing that you're not going anywhere. So
no, clear
the
salary.
Yeah. Clear the salary now and like maybe that way one day you have to buy something and maybe there's something to buy or maybe you don't and there are guys in your system. But in case you have to buy something, you have the resources to do it.
Yeah, totally.
Although the first thing that you want to do is always to be able to develop guys from within your own system.
Yeah.
Let's talk Vogie and then I want to get on the London series.
Sure.
Okay.
I
was going to ask this question.
Oh, yeah, hit me with the question. Yeah.
Dave Williams at DWilly95 wants to know which dark horse candidate is most likely to be traded? Haniger, Gonzalez, Vogie, someone else.
Oh boy. I don't think those three are going anywhere.
They are attached to Mitch Haniger even before his injury. I think the time to deal Mitch Haniger was this offseason. Yeah, I wish they had done it.
Yeah.
I know that you disagree with me, John. I wish they had done it. Atlanta was willing to pay out the wazoo, and I think that there is not... Prospects are valued more than they ever have been. So if you can get someone to do something stupid, like the Mets did...
What up, Brody? By the way, I tried to add Brody Mets. Van Wagenen on LinkedIn, and he has not added me back yet. But he has a LinkedIn page, and like most of his friends are just the other MLB teams. It's like he's connected with like the Chicago White Sox and the Twins. And like, that's like half of the people he's connected with. So I'll keep you guys updated, but I do not think he wants any part of... me on LinkedIn.
That's good to hear.
But anyway, post-injury, it's a moot point. I don't think Vogelbach is going anywhere. I think he could help a team just because he's got a lot of power in that bat, and sure, there are not a ton of those guys out there. But I don't think he'll go anywhere.
No. I think the Mariners, too, would understand the like backlash that would come from trading the one fun player from this season.
Yeah. Well, J.P. Crawford. But.
Right, but you know what I mean. Like, the one that the fans, I think, are the most attached
yeah,
to.
Yeah, people love right him. Now. And he is...
He's
like,
great.
Yeah.
He's kind of an integral part. Like, his teammates love him.
Yeah. And the
he's
thing
the
is...
the third longest tenured Mariner.
Oh, my God.
On the 40
after Seager and Felix?
After Seager... Well, so... Matt Festa, Braden Bishop, and Andrew Moore, and Roenis Elias entered the organization sooner.
And Elias left.
Yeah, Moore and Elias left, yeah. And Festa and Braden Bishop were just drafted like a month ahead of him. But Vogie's been on the 40-man roster since July 2016. Only Kyle Seager
unbelievable.
And Felix have been there longer. Yeah, it was nuts.
Here's another thing. A lot of people, rightfully so, get caught up in the dingers because he hits the ball 500 feet when he squares it up. But as of right now, on Monday night, there are 24 players in the American League with a double-digit walk rate. Only two of them are north of 17%, and they are Mike Trout and Daniel Vogelbach.
Yeah.
That is Mariners All-Star... Daniel Vogelbach.
He's walking 17.7% of the time and only striking out 22.4. So
put him in the Derby.
For someone, yeah, he should be in the Derby. That,
he should be in the Derby.
We've been screaming that all year. But for someone who has that kind of power to also control the plate that well, something that I've noticed actually that I think is kind of funny is that he'll get balls that are strikes. Like, the umpires, I think, are trusting his eye more than their own now.
Which is Trout-ish. Exactly. I mean, Trout gets those calls. Yeah, it's...
He also has the neat thing that a lot of power hitters don't have, which is part of the chase thing, but like he'll swing at a pitch that's up out of the zone sometimes, and that's, I think, usually the way you get him is like a high fastball up a little bit out of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
It is, that's true. He does not chase breaking balls in the dirt. Like, he is unreal at avoiding a break. And like, there've been little interviews with him about like he's not like a huge like he'll watch video, but his big thing is like, what is this guy's out pitch?
Right,
and like,
yeah,
okay, I'm going to, I guess, memorize what that looks like,
yeah,
and then never swing at it when it's
yeah
trying to get me to bite. Like,
I
it's
think
unbelievable.
He must have like an incredible visual memory.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
I'm
almost
picturing
like
that,
one of those photographic memories,
yeah,
where he just is able to immediately photograph with his mind what a pitcher looks like when he's about to throw that out pitch,
uh-huh,
and see it and recognize it and be like, which is amazing because it's just another reminder that like baseball smarts and regular smarts are very different.
Oh, exactly.
I once ran into Vogelbach in the clubhouse at the AAA, and he was carrying a gigantic stack of boxes, and I was like, what are you doing with those boxes? And he was like, these are cards. I have to sign them by tomorrow. And I was like, why would your agent make you sign three gigantic boxes full of cards in 24 hours? And he was like, well, because I was supposed to do it last week.
That's
I was
a
like,
classic.
Are you the
that's
kid who always
awesome
left
that
your
is
homework
hilarious
until Sunday evenings? And he was like, when I did it.
That
which
is fantastic.
I'm picturing, you know that gif of Zach Galifianakis from The Hangover where he's sitting
mm-hmm
at the card table and his face is completely stoic, but all around him are the numbers and
oh
equations.
Exactly.
That's what
exactly
I think a Vogie at bat is. Like, he looks so in control But in his head, he's like, okay, 89 on the black. That means the next one's going to be 95 up and in. And at this launch angle, I could probably hit it out if I swing here. And it's like, I think he has that exact thing you're talking about, where like he's an incredibly smart baseball player.
Just enters a baseball fugue state.
Baseball fugue.
And one of the things, I mean, we all have, you know, John played baseball for a very long time. Kate has, you know, been around baseball long enough. I've, you know, had my dalliances around professional athletes. And one of the things that I've learned is that, like, you can talk to them about real life and you'll only get so much. But if you ask a smart question or you, like, breach a topic about their sport that gets them excited, they'll go forever.
Yeah.
And that's what I think Dan Vogelbach is.
Absolutely. I think he could really talk about hitting forever. And he has, like, taken this big... John, you talked about this a little in your article about him being an all-star. He's taken, like, a mentorship role.
Yeah.
Towards the younger players.
Growth.
I hope he's helping out Jared Kelnick right now because he is in kind of a tough spot.
Wasn't there something about that where... Was it Kelnick who said he talked to Vogie? There was some article from earlier this season where one of the minors guys was in a
They
slump.
Roomed together in spring training, I believe. And also just generally have texted together throughout the season.
You think Vogelbach's an emoji guy?
Yes.
I think so?
I think Daniel Vogelbach is an emoji guy.
Which ones in particular?
I think he's big on the like explosion emoji.
Oh, I like that one.
Definitely like the like muscle arm.
Yeah. A classic from what I've seen of like athletes who are online a lot and they're using emojis. A classic is that like the guy with the steam coming out of his nose.
Yeah.
And the little purple devil. And I don't think Vogie's either of those.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
He's not angry.
No. I mean the steam one is like just did like a. Just like a PR on my squats.
Yeah, like, I think that's like
we'll he probably
the,
does.
We'll like, see JP Crawford do the steam out of the nose emoji a couple times. I think the same JP Crawford who is stumping for Vogie to get in the home run derby.
It was very encouraging to see how they all were. So anyway, to close up this question, we don't really see Hanover Gonzalez or I mean Marco Gonzalez will not be a Mariner over. Jerry DePoto's cold dead body.
He's on the best contract of it. Maybe anyone on the team. Yeah. Marco's like basically interning for the Mariners.
I actually have a proposal for that because I think not of those three, but among the others category.
Okay, yes.
I think Domingo Santana has a good chance to be traded.
Yeah, I can see that.
There are a number of teams that, and you know, we've seen Domingo be terrible at defense. He's looked significant, you know. He had a really bad throw in Sunday's game that didn't cost them the game because they didn't score more than one run. But still, it was not great. But he's been, you know, markedly better in right field, and I think he's just probably more comfortable over there. He's a good outfielder, and he's I think a worthwhile starting outfielder for a good team.
Yeah.
And there are teams that are running out. Crap, like the Phillies, you know, already having gotten Jay Bruce, need another outfielder already because they lost
Odubel Herrera
and Andrew McCutchen.
They're playing Kingery in center field,
which is rough.
Ideal
like,
for the
playoffs. Cleveland needs outfield help desperately if they're trying to make the playoffs and sort of extend
that. But,
I mean, their whole situation,
but
is
yeah, there
rough.
Are players who could, there are teams who could use a player like Domingo Santana,
sure. And he's, I mean, he's
this
entering
kind of,
arbitration next year, so like he's a cheap guy who. Has talent. He's 26. Like, and the Mariners have so many outfielders that they have the spots to, or they have the players to fill in that position in a way they don't really immediately at almost any
he
other position.
He would be a good one as he's not a rental, so he might return a pretty good prospect. Or you could package him with somebody who has a yucky contract.
Sure.
That leaks into this question. Sean Collins at Archduke Collins asks, how will the Mariners fit Jake Fraley into the lineup in 2020? You can't start all four of Smith, Fraley, Haniger, Santana.
That's a good point.
And Fraley, he says again, but
Bishop, maybe
Bishop
was...
I think is what he was getting there. But yes, trade question mark.
Domingo would seem like the odd man. I mean, Domingo and Malik are the two that would rise to the top.
But Malik is the only one who can play center field other than Bishop.
Fraley can play center. He doesn't really have a great arm, but now that it's Malik, I don't think he'd be great in center. I mean, like, Braden's obviously the best.
That's what I was going to say. You could also, if you were in a pinch and, like, somehow contending, like, Mitch Haniger could play center field. It wouldn't be great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, he could. I could play center field. I'm not saying I'd do it well, but, like, anyone can play center field.
Theoretically.
Yeah, that's ultimately why, I mean, they've just set themselves up where they have to make a trade, right? Because, like, either you're moving Domingo to DH or you are trading
him.
Which
Vogie is already occupying that spot.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if in 2 years they have a full-time DH on their roster.
Right.
Because go for it.
Vogie, by the way, 2.1 FWAR with pretty much zero defensive value.
Oh, yeah.
It's all offense.
True DH. Yeah. A true DH. I stand our DH king.
Yeah. I mean, he's just... I love Domingo Santana, and I think it's been fantastic to watch him play, and it's been really neat to see his offense return to essentially the level that it was in 2017, where, you know, I mean, he's on a over 30 home run pace. He's been a, you know, 130 WRC plus guy. He's, you know, just slugging like hell in Safeco, which is not a massive pitcher's park anymore, but he's...
You mean T-Mobile.
Drink, yeah, I do.
Drink.
Sorry, yeah, I do.
So anyway, to kind of...
Thanks, Kazu.
Put a cap on that. We think that of Smith, Fraley, Haniger, Santana, Bishop, Santana is the most likely for trade.
I think so.
And I
yes.
agree with that.
Yeah. Let's go again.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, I think we have a guest that has been clamoring to get on the podcast. Now is the time to talk to them. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to go. I have a prior obligation.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
You always miss our guests.
I know. Well, there's only so much room in this studio here that I think I've got to slide out. So if it's what has to be done for the sake of the podcast, I will cede my time. This has been great. Thank you, as always. And hope you enjoy your guest. The last guest was amazing, so this one... should be just on the same level, I would imagine.
Yes.
We only bring the best.
It's true.
All right, now we're going to bring in our guest. We obviously, the Mariners weren't playing across the pond in London this past weekend, but the Yankees and the Red Sox put on really quite an entertaining display, so we thought we'd get someone... with some more firsthand experience. Now, we brought our guest over here. They need no introduction, but our friend, could you introduce yourself for us, please?
Hello, love. It's British guy. I'm not going to give you my real name. I'm a little worried about sort of the state of things on the internet, so I don't want to sort of reveal too much. But yeah, I'm here. Hello. I've got loads of questions, a lot to learn. And I heard you lot could lend a bit of expertise to the scenario.
Absolutely. So, yeah. British guy, as you'll be known.
Yeah, it's good.
Were you actually able to make it out to the games?
Yeah.
Oh, you were? Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic.
I was there. Had a sit.
Had you been to a baseball stadium? So, had you been to a baseball game before?
I had not. This was a first-time experience for me.
What was your take? What did you think?
I've got loads of questions.
Hit us.
First question, why?
Why
do this? Why is the season so bloody long?
You were on there for 2 games.
Think about this, though. Sincerely, it truly speaks to how long the season is and how relatively insignificant each result is that you can go, you know what I like to do? Let's have a go in England for no reason, middle of the season. Like, it's 2 games. Yeah, like, it matters. But if you're going to put the players on a jet, fly them across a bloody ocean, play 2 games, obviously it doesn't matter that much. So I don't understand. Why is it sort of like, are you shackled to the past where we've got to play 300 games per season? Like, why not shorten things a little bit?
It's true. A weekend,
give the players more rest.
A weekend trip to London is quite a lot of work.
It's a bit strange, isn't it?
That's a fair point.
Could you imagine the middle of the season, Manchester United said, oh, we're going to have a match in Kansas City. Expand the game. No, they're never going to do that. It's not happening, mate. So I don't understand that. We're going to uproot ourselves and have a proper series in another country. Was it fun? Yeah, I had a great time. But I had a lot of sort of confusion about the mechanics of it all.
Well, that's very, I mean, that's very empathetic
of you. What was your question about mechanics?
Well, not so much the game, but sort of the game, if you know what I mean. Like, sending the players there in the middle of the season.
I don't know, you just making their quotes there doesn't help.
They've got to change time zones, they've got to uproot their lives, they've got to have this whole, you know, the pageantry of it all.
You know, I mean, the idea, the argument from MLB, right, is they're trying to grow the game.
You don't want the game.
You don't want the game.
That's what they don't understand.
They were sold out games.
But what about, they were sold out, and like, apparently
that's the novelty of it, love.
The fans were very excited by the announcement that, remember, if you catch a ball in the stands, you can keep it and take it home.
Well, yeah, that's a good crack. I mean, you get a free souvenir. I mean, I'll go anything that's got a free souvenir. But I think the other thing was I found myself in a bit of a moral quandary when I was there.
Moral quandary?
Yeah, because I didn't know who to support. I did a little bit of research on both sides, the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Yeah, definitely quite a rivalry.
Right, well, because from what I understand, neither of these teams are real bastions of morality, necessarily. You know, it's like, oh, we've got on this side, in the pinstripes, the sort of corporate overlords who want to control each minute hair on their players' beards. No, yes. Fuck off. I will say this, though, about the Yankees. I was truly in awe at the size of those lads. To use a bit of internet parlance here. Could you imagine Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton as your centre-back pairing on the pitch? If you're playing football, those two are your back line. That team would allow negative goals, isn't it?
It's true. Yeah. I mean, it is...
Do you know what I mean? You go have a run at the goal, and then you see two pristinely tan, 6 foot, or I don't know what that is in metres. It's big. I know that it's big.
It'd be, quite tough to get a free kick over those guys on a wall.
Yeah, no further advancements from me, thank you. but then it's like, oh, what have we here on the other side? A team full of bellends from American Ireland. I don't want that either.
American Ireland.
Surely that can't be good. And on top of it all, this one really chapped me. They've still got an inferiority complex, despite being utterly magnificent for a whole decade.
Oh, yes. That is a very big
what's going on there?
Boston sports.
It's a bit like City, the football team, you know? Manchester City.
Absolutely.
You get pummeled for centuries, and then you taste a bit of success, and you're purely insufferable. I don't like it.
I think they tried to send sort of the best that baseball has to offer, but I think a lot of it involves, you know, the history that's tied up in it. I mean,
I was thrilled that we could add Yankees Red Sox to the list of great British rivalries. You know, I mentioned City versus United.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Blur versus Oasis.
Sure.
You've got the people of Britain against dentists. Things like that. All of those. Now we've got Yankee Red Sox sort of in the pantheon, but...
How did it compare? Did you get a chance to see, I believe the NFL keeps putting Jaguars
they won't give us, they're trying to make Blake Bortles happen. It's not going to happen, mate.
So did they recognize the inferiority of Blake Bortles?
Yeah, did it at that's least, the bad place.
Yeah, did it at least exceed that import?
It was better than that,
All right, well, that's a start.
Well, also, you know, I keep hearing about this juiced ball, right? Yeah. That was sort of the talk of the town. So that's I'm to believe they've injected steroids into the actual baseball.
More or less.
That can't be real. Anabolic steroids in the baseball.
It's because the baseballs are all, as Rob Manfred wants us to understand, they're made by hand.
They're made by
hand. So they're artisanal. There's something that you should be able to relate to.
It's like a rough spun cloak.
It's like a fine suit down on the Haight-Ashbury.
Yeah.
No, wait, that's
in San Francisco. Yes. But I like that place as well. You know.
Savile Row is what I was trying to think of.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, it's a fine handmade item that occasionally develops some slight...
imperfections.
So there's no actual performance-enhancing drugs in the ball itself.
No, they're just slick and smooth. You seem very dejected. Did you make some strong statements about that?
Yeah, I might have, yeah.
Oh,
I was there watching everybody lose their minds over the score. My mate goes, oh, this is brilliant. You know, usually it's bugger all for scoring. That's when I lean over and go, well, you know, they've got steroids in the baseball. So I've made an ass of myself and potentially led many people astray.
I mean, I don't think you... There were 40 runs scored in that first.
Yeah. There might have been actual steroids in those baseballs.
This French lad on the Yankees, he's the best player in the league, I imagine.
Are you referring to DJ LeMahieu?
Yeah.
Oh, the French lad.
Nobody could stop him.
He was really something.
Were you around the fan who caught the ground rule?
I was not. I was happy for the lad, but I don't know him personally. He's got to keep it, obviously. He's got to... You know, people are going to ask him to sell it. It's a historic moment. I mean, DJ LeMahieu himself is here in England, hitting balls into the bloody seats. But yeah, I mean, usually when we have a situation like that, it's, oh, you've got the ball, you've got to, you know, have a play with it, give it to a kid, and then immediately they come take it. But now you got to keep it, go have a throw with your son. That's how you expand the game. They should have given everyone a baseball upon entrance. You have a throw in your yard, and then... Suddenly, we've got a good player in the league, but that's not happened yet. Has there ever been a British player in MLB? Do you know? Probably not, I would imagine.
Not for a long time. I mean, a lot of, you know, the game's about 150 years old, so yeah. There were a bunch who were born in the U.S., or born in Britain and then moved
and
played. But I don't know that there's been one in quite some time.
Yeah.
Now, how did you feel about London Stadium being sort of transformed in the way that it was? Because it certainly was interesting to see.
It was
clearly a very different, a non-baseball field turned into a baseball field.
Yeah.
Was that exciting? Was it unique? Was it upsetting?
It was exciting for the scoring of it, yeah.
That's true.
But it's a bit artificial, right? It's not like, it's not the natural state of the game. It's like, you know, actually, you know, keep bringing it back to football, but... your lot, New York City FC, they play in Yankee Stadium and they've got to literally shrink the pitch to fit everyone. That's what it felt like here in London because, I mean, well, see, now I'm in a bit of a crisis because I thought there was literally steroids in the ball. But now I have to unlearn that and understand that it's a bit more...
We won't out.
It's a bit more than that. But seeing the ball...
No one listens to this.
No one in Britain listens to this. Yeah. That's really...
No one, period.
Seeing the ball fly halfway to Belfast was exciting. I'm not gonna say anything about that. But it did feel like we were given sort of like the microwaved version of baseball. Where it's
kind of a trailer, like a trailer to the game
right.
that might not deliver.
Right, yeah.
And they set us
the exciting teams. Like, I'm glad we didn't have to see the bloody Orioles or something like that. You know, at least we've got the cream of the crop. But it wasn't a natural experience. I'll have to come here stateside and see a game for myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Should we ask? We have a couple questions.
Oh yeah.
Maybe you could answer.
I've got some opinions.
Aaron Stern.
Oh, I know him.
Stern.
Hello, Aaron.
Asks, after I'm done with college in Canada, should I stay there and never go back to the U.S.?
Aaron, yes. Do that. Do not come here. They've got a lot of things that are sort of backwards here in America. They're on the wrong side of the road. They've got bloody awful fashion sense. It's this lad over here is drinking gin with orange juice. I've never seen anything like it.
It's gin and juice.
Yeah, but it's not... mate, I don't know how to explain it to you without sort of your American exceptionalism dominating the conversation. It's bad is what it is. You've got this drink. You've got your little mason jar because you think you're saving the planet or whatever. And then, you know, you put a shitty drink in it. It doesn't matter what you've got in the jar. It's still bad. So yeah, Aaron, yeah, stay in Canada. They've got a lot of things going for them up there. It's right. Good. British Columbia, I've heard, has got lovely parks, a lake or two. Not that you don't got that here, but I mean, there's a lot of politics that's also involved. Yeah. Don't want to get into that.
I will say, I think our lovely guest is correct. I do want, just for our legal protection, you do still drive on the same side of the road in Canada. So don't start doing anything
that's
different
correct.
Up there.
Do not want to be culpable for any sort of road incidents. But yeah, stay in Canada, mate. It's better.
The rest of the questions that I have are sort of Mariner specific.
Well, I was going to ask you lot some questions.
Oh, hit us.
Mariner.
Hit us with them.
Yeah. So I don't know a lot.
Flip the script.
I don't know a ton about this team, the Manners. I know that they're rubbish from what I've heard.
More or less.
I've heard that a lot of players will sort of play for the Manners and then leave and then you get all poyed off. Is that correct? Do you know poyed off?
No.
Poyed off. It's a term. Okay, let's say Johnny.
Yeah.
You're at the pub, right?
Yeah.
Someone comes up to you. Yeah, someone comes up to you and says, oh, Johnny, you want to come home with me? Have a shag. You say, no, thank you. You've poyed them off. It's sort of a rejection. And that's what a lot of players done to the Mariners. I mean, Alex Rodriguez, famous example.
Mm-hmm.
Others.
Mm-hmm.
We only know A-Rod. He came over for some reason. We were like, eh. Don't know about you.
Was there any pre-interaction with A-Rod, like with the fame of Madonna or other
people? Oh, yeah. I mean, we knew who he was because he's got sort of this whole ego to him. We knew his birds, yeah. I mean, Madonna, Kate Hudson, Jennifer Lopez. But mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about his pedigree on the field. And he was quite good. Mm-hmm. And I did my research before coming here.
Yeah.
And I found out that he was on the Mariners. And
sure
I
was.
Wanted to sort of bring that up. I'll tread lightly because I know it might be a bit touchy here and there.
It was a tough time. I don't think we handled it very well. He left. He got a very big contract. Good for him. But we were not necessarily ready to see that. I believe we threw a lot of fake money when he came back.
Yeah, I've seen the video. Yeah.
Yeah. It was not. Not sure everyone handled themselves very maturely, but he seemed to find a new sort of life at this point.
Well, the other thing that I've learned, I was on your website there, lookoutlanding.com. It's a proper website, I'll say.
Oh, thank you.
I learned of a lad, George Kirby.
George Kirby.
That's a proper British name.
He's got a proper British face, too.
Yeah, he's got a lot of the old package that we're looking for here. I don't know how he escaped us. So the question then that it led me to is... if that's not the most British name in baseball, it's damn near the top. So I've actually compiled a list of other British-sounding baseballers. Feel free to contribute your own. The big one that I've gotten when I asked around is this bloke, Whit Merrifield.
That's a very British name. It's up there, that is true.
But that, to me, sounds a little more like a place than a person. Like, oh, it's good weather, let's lay about Whit Merrifield. You know what I mean? It's not so much a... you're not going to name your kid Whit here.
I mean...
Merrifield for sure is British, but Whit, I mean, who's that for? You lot is who it's for.
Isn't there a, I mean, maybe like the Wigs? The Wigs?
We don't talk about that. No, I don't want to get into that.
I believe it's short for Whitley.
Whitley Merrifield.
Whitley, yeah.
That's his name.
Which is not really much more sensible.
That sounds like a third division football club.
Probably. Whitney it's probably Merrifield. In there. You guys have a lot of divisions.
I would like to point out that Whit Merrifield has a brother named Height. H-I-T-E.
Height Merrifield?
Yeah.
That's my teacher. Hi. Hello. Didn't know you. Where's he doing? Is he still educating?
No, I think he played. He also has another brother named Costner.
Costner Merrifield? What is... it's a lot tough there, Rocker. It's too many kids, first of all. I've got to stick to two. That's the good amount.
Yeah, there's only so much room in Britain.
Okay, so obviously, something you might know, we love the name Colin. Everyone's called Colin in England. So there's two people I found, Colin McHugh and Colin Moran. Which one to you sounds more British?
Both of them sound kind of Irish to me.
McHugh is proper Irish, yeah, but they've got a lot of them who sort of swam across.
Moran is definitely Irish.
So which one to you, if I were to say...
I would say Moran. Because I think for sure McHugh would be Irish.
They're both Irish.
All right, but I would not.
All right, sorted. Do you have any lads you want to contribute to the British
name? There's Richard Lovelady.
Richard Lovelady?
Richard Lovelady. Oh. Who's a minor league pitcher.
Tell me
more. The Royals?
Theoretically, team up with Whit Merrifield and you've got a band.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and there's another one whose name is escaping me right now, but I will think of.
I've got one, not an active player, now a coach actually in the Mariners organization. Born in the United Kingdom. That is Lance Painter.
Oh, hello.
Really?
That's true. He is legit British.
He is legitimately
British. Has a British sounding name.
Wow.
But if you want to go a little further back, there's a man who, and I don't know literally if you heard this, but there's a home run we refer to as the shot heard around the world.
Oh, yeah.
That may be a bit American-centric of it, so I don't know if this carries.
Well, it's got two connotations. It's the baseball and also the war that we
that's true.
That we,
I think
we
this
gave
was,
you.
This was, well, I think this was...
it was a proper throne war. We didn't want you anymore. Cause
yeah.
You know,
it was a little later
that
than that.
That sounds
but,
like people in the South call it the War of Northern Aggression. But okay, continue.
I don't know about that. All I know is we were playing... It was an away game for us, you know that.
I believe Bobby Thompson, who hit the shot heard around the world.
Is he
also British. Born in Glasgow.
Glasgow. Interesting. Have a row with him later. Bobby Thompson. Oh, yeah. Glasgow, United Kingdom. Nicknamed the Staten Island Scot. Oh. Listen, Lobby. If you look at this picture here, he's having a proper go at this bat. He's giving it a sort of full embrace.
Yeah.
As if to say, absolutely. Oh, you're mine. I'm yours. Let's have a go. All right. Yeah. There's baseball. It's not for me, but... You know, I'm glad we got to experience it. I'm glad you lot had me here on the podcast to discuss your team. Are there any more questions from your loyal trustees?
Ah, oh, man. Well, I mean, you might not know about this, but what do you think about banning the shift? That's a question from at Gizboo.
Gizboo?
Yeah.
I had a puppy called Gizboo.
Gizboo.
Yeah, he's a good dog. He's proper dead now, but it doesn't matter. The shift. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, you play around with your formation based on the opponent. Yeah,
3-4-3.
Yeah, that's one of them, yeah. You got other ones. So of any combination of numbers you could devise, you could play, you know, 10-1 if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, we should talk about, we've got actually a proper event. Your lot, United Women's Team versus our lot, Lionesses. Yeah.
That's true.
Yes.
That's coming up. Is this going to be out before the match happens?
I think so.
It should be.
Well, Tuesday, I believe, in the afternoon. We'll figure it out. But I don't like our chances, the Brits. You've got,
really?
Have you seen your ladies? They're a juggernaut.
Well, yes.
It's unstoppable, that lot. I don't know what sort of training is happening out here, but it seems like it's a bit nefarious, in my opinion.
Oh, nothing nefarious. I mean, it's just they've been playing the game for a long time.
They've been playing the game for a long time. Do you know where I'm from? Invented the bloody game. Come on. They've got good football.
I have read that the Brits are, they think the US women are arrogant.
They're not arrogant.
The US women specifically, they seem to think that, to invoke sort of a biblical quote, that pride will goeth before the fall. They seem to think that the British women are going to take down the US women because the US women are too cocky.
Who wrote that? Who's saying these things?
I mean, that's, I believe, your Daily Mail.
That's a bit of a tabloid, love. Come on, you don't got to listen to that. Don't put any stock in that. I've heard a lot of people say this idea that the US, they're too good, they're too cocky, too arrogant. But that's rock and roll. That's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Sex Pistols, the Ramones, all those, the bands that came out of my generation.
Sorry, the Daily Mirror. The Daily Mirror. Are these American stars too arrogant, with a big picture of Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe?
Do you know what Piers Morgan should do? Look in the Daily Mirror and punch himself right in the face. I hate that bloke.
Yes.
It's hot air coming out of his arse.
He
all
says
day.
He can't wait for the Lionesses of England to take down... to pop the over-exaggerated ego of Megan Rapinoe. I can't remember exactly what he said.
Someone
but...
to pop him is what he needs to do. Yeah, I mean, we're going to lose. America's got it. Like, unless some sort of catastrophe happens, congratulations on the World Cup. It's quite exciting.
That game's at noon on Tuesday, so we should have this out.
Ideally,
this should be going
up
Tuesday morning. So, listener, you should have this available to you.
It's a bit sad. I might not be allowed back in. It's sort of a reverse Brexit. I think US...
Brexit.
US 2-0. One goal in the first half, one goal second half.
Ooh. Yeah. And who scores those goals?
Well, I like Rapinoe. She's got a lot of flair. She's got the skill and sort of... It's a walk-it-talk-it situation. Do you know Migos? We've just discovered Migos. We're very late.
Oh,
we've got them. They've got that tune, walk-it-talk-it. Yeah, it's a good shout-back. But I think Rapinoe will do that. And then maybe... let's go for Dark Horse. I think it'll be a sub. I think we'll go Mallory Pugh.
That's
a proper British name. Say Mallory for me.
Mallory?
Mallory. It's a good name. I like it.
Mallory. All right. Well, thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You flew me out here.
Absolutely. I mean, we used
our entire podcast.
Yeah, we
used a year of budget for Lookout Landing to buy a
Lookout
plane ticket.
Lookout Landing private jet. I've got to go back, too. You have a plan for that.
Absolutely.
My walking.
Yeah, certainly. Well, next year we will...
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to find that...
There's a box here with some holes punched in it.
No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to find that Aaron Judge bloke. He'll carry me across the bloody Atlantic.
There you go.
On his shoulder.
Like a kaiju. That's, I suppose, more Pacific Ocean.
Don't know what that is.
No, no one knows what that is.
No. I don't know about that.
All right. Well, thank you so much to British Guy for being with us.
Bang on, mate. It's a proper podcast you've got here. I love your stuff. And keep it going straight away. I mean,
thank you.
Right to the top for you guys.
Thank you to everyone who submitted questions. Sorry if we didn't get to all of them.
Yeah.
We're always here, though. Send them back next time, and we will try to get to them. And thank you to you for listening. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.